Welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One. Thank you very much for listening to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. I'm your host, Will, and as always, I'm joined by Ben Stevens, the editor of the Grand Prix 24/7 website. It seems like we only recorded a few days ago, but such is the 2020 Formula One season. We have another race on the horizon, and that is the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix at Imola. So, rather exciting return to a track that plenty of fans consider one of their favourites, and one of the tracks that a lot of people have wanted to see return to the calendar. Ben, I think you're in the same boat as me that we're probably a little bit too young to remember the last time the Formula One raced at Imola, but excited nonetheless, I imagine.
Yes, I am very excited to return to the circuit. It's actually a circuit, funnily enough, that it's just kind of the way things are, I actually know quite well because in my brief dalliance in sim racing back in 2013, Assetto Corsa, it was like my main track, Imola. So even though I've never sort of followed F1 when it was racing there, I do know it and I do love it. And I hope, you know, we get a good race there on Sunday.
It's obviously an old track and potentially quite similar to some of the ones we've been racing at recently, which instead of kind of the tilcodromes, they're slightly narrower, but fast corners and just a bit more kind of difficulty. And obviously when you do run wide, you don't have kind of like these acres of runoff. And I think that will lead to a bit more attrition and generally just a slightly different type of race. It's more about surviving necessarily than kind of some of these tilcodrome tracks where obviously, you know, there's not really any chance of someone crashing. It's just really whether there's a reliability failure or not.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think that's exacerbated even more, isn't it, by the fact that they've only got one session of practice. Nothing on today, obviously. That's why we're recording a preview today. So yeah, everything is just sort of, as we saw at the Nürburgring, you've just got less time to prepare. There's going to be mistakes anyway, as you say. And yeah, it's going to probably see a few thrills and spills.
So yeah, that's the really interesting thing, I think, about this weekend. We're not used to having such a quick turnaround with just the one practice session. And it's going to be a completely new experience for all of the teams. Obviously, we had it in a kind of weird way at Nürburgring because of the weather. But I think it's going to be fascinating to see which teams are able to get on top of things quicker. I think one intra-team battle that we've seen is quite interesting is that Bottas seems to get on top of the track quicker than Hamilton, but then Hamilton kind of comes good the longer the weekend goes along. So that'll be a really interesting thing to follow. I haven't really noticed that being such an obvious thing that happens in other teams, but you know, if one of Renault, McLaren or Racing Point can kind of get the lead on the others, or just has a car that's naturally more suited to the circuit, the others are going to have less time to kind of make those adaptations. So do you have any team that you expect to do well here? What kind of car do you think will suit the kind of track characteristics of Imola?
Honestly, it's kind of tough to say, besides the Mercedes, because that suits everywhere, of course. And the tricky thing as well is that those midfield trio of McLaren, Renault and Racing Point are so evenly matched. I think it'll come down to basically the engineers really earning their money, because it's not so much the car characteristics. I think, at least in that trio, you know, there's not one that's, at least anymore with the way Renault sort of improved, there's not one particular sort of track setup that favours any one of them, like, you know, conclusively, but it'll be a case of which one sort of gets their setup right out of the box. And that could be any of the three teams. We'll just have to wait and see. In terms of being at the front, as you say, the Bottas thing is very interesting. It does seem to be the case, and it's particularly pronounced this season, where it seems like he's just, you know, he's on it quickly. He usually leads the practices, and then Lewis comes good towards the end of qualifying. So it'd be very interesting this time, because unlike the Nürburgring where that did happen, this time Lewis is knowing, you know, he doesn't have as much time to prepare. So if that makes a difference for him. And then the other question as well, of course, is how close Red Bull will be behind them. Honestly, I don't think this is a track that particularly will suit their car in terms of, you know, allowing them to get a little bit closer. There's just too many straights here and stuff like that, where I think that, even though they're not particularly long straights, there's too many sections where I think, you know, the Mercedes engine can sort of eke out a little bit more of an advantage than it might at some others. So yeah, I'm not expecting too much from Red Bull, but overall there's definitely a lot of intrigue.
See, I'm actually going to go the opposite way to you. I think that because of the curbs, I think that we know from Austria, you know, with the infamous stay off the curbs, similar situation that we had at Mugello, I think that the curbs are going to throw a spanner in the works for Mercedes this weekend. I don't know if that will mean that Max can get ahead of them in qualifying, because I'm not sure how much of an issue, you know, the curbs could become over just a single lap. But I do see a situation where they start to put the pressure on during the race, and potentially Max is going to have to try and find his way past them, because you know, I guess the area where they had that real struggle in Austria, Max was already out of the race because of mechanical failure. So that's kind of, I think, a reason for hope. Obviously, we don't quite know how much the curbs are going to play a part, but from what I've been reading, it seems that that is something that has definitely been a factor in the past. But obviously, we've seen that Alfa have announced that Antonio Giovinazzi and Kimi Raikkonen will be continuing as their drivers for 2021. I'll be honest, pretty underwhelming announcement as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, as an F1 driver, he hasn't been so good. And I think, like everyone, like yourself, I was quite shocked by it. It seemed like all the rumours coming out were basically that he was a dead man walking. Kimi less so, just because I think there's generally been, regardless of the fact that his pace clearly isn't what it once was, there's sort of this understanding that Kimi was, you know, for whoever did come in to replace Giovinazzi, he'd be sort of the, you know, mentor figure, as much of a mentor as someone who barely speaks can be. But yeah, just keeping Giovinazzi in it, I'm not sure if that says more about Ferrari's confidence in him or more about their sort of lack of confidence in Callum Ilott and Robert Schwartzman. Maybe they just think it's too soon for them, because I think it's safe to assume at this point that Mick's going to be graduating. That's clearly not going to be at Alpha. It's probably going to be at Haas. I'm sure you'll have something to say on that. But yeah, as far as Giovinazzi goes, he's clearly not the guy to fill in at Ferrari anytime soon. He's obviously not better than Charles Leclerc. He's not better than Carlos Sainz. So keeping him in the seat just seems quite odd to me.
Yeah, it is a bit of a bizarre decision, if I'm being honest. I don't think that Giovinazzi's quite done enough to prove that he's kind of got what it takes going forward. I think an interesting part of it is that I also think that potentially someone could be doing a better job than Kimi, but I think because of his status, it was always going to come down to, you know, his decision. If he wanted to continue, I always imagine that that seat was going to be there for him. I think, as you say, that the really interesting kind of ramifications of this is what's going to go on at Haas. So obviously Haas have announced that Grosjean and Magnussen will both be leaving at the end of the season. So I think this really does open the door for potentially Mick Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin line up at Haas, which is, it's an interesting way to go. It's a complete opposite of what they've been doing in recent seasons, obviously with the experienced hand of Grosjean and Magnussen. But I think that it's probably not necessarily an error from that team. I think that it's been shown that the experience hasn't really got them anywhere, so maybe it is worth trying some kind of new F2 drivers who've been impressing. And obviously you have the factor with that both of them are bringing backing. Schumacher in the sense that he is a Schumacher, and obviously Mazepin in the way of his kind of financial backing from his family. So I think that's the really interesting one. I'm disappointed, to be honest, that potentially we won't be able to see Callum Ilott in Formula 1 now. I think he's really been impressive in F2, just really quick and slightly unfortunate at times. And I really wanted to see him get a seat. And I think he probably would be able to do more with that Alpha seat than Giovinazzi. But maybe they think he needs one more year in F2. And if he does get another year, I wouldn't be surprised to see him go and win that championship next season.
My question to you is, as someone who doesn't particularly follow F2. I'm obviously aware of the drivers, watch it occasionally, but don't follow it particularly closely. What should we expect out of Nikita Mazepin, assuming he is the guy going across the Mick?
Mazepin is definitely a quick driver. He isn't the quickest in F2. I think that, you know, Tsunoda, Mick, Callum Ilott, and potentially Schwartzman would be ahead of him there, but he's certainly a quick driver. It's his second year in the championship, and he's with High Tech. Yeah, he's been partnered with Luca Giotto, who's a really experienced driver, and he was challenging for the title last year. And yeah, he's actually done really well. He's outperformed Giotto. He's had a couple of race wins. Had one race win at Spa taken away from him for a penalty. So yeah, no, he's not a complete mug by any means. Obviously, Latifi also, you know, in F2 was relatively impressive. Although I'd say that Mazepin's probably competing in a more competitive field than Latifi was. Latifi obviously I think is in his fourth year of F2 when he finished second. So Mazepin's currently sixth in the standings. So like by no means doing a bad job at all. And as I said, he's had the two wins and the one race where he actually kind of finished over the line first before getting the penalty. So yeah, I don't think he's as good a driver as Mick Schumacher. I don't think he's as good a driver as Callum Ilott, who I would have liked to see get the promotion. But he isn't just a pay driver. And I guess just, you know, on the topic of kind of recent F2 drivers, we got this situation with George Russell. You know, firstly, there was all this speculation about him potentially losing his drive, Sergio Perez potentially lurking around that Williams seat. And obviously, as you know, there's obviously still a chance that Sergio Perez could end up at Haas, but also rumours that he could end up at Williams if he doesn't get that Red Bull seat. But now it's been found that George Russell's trainer has contracted COVID and Russell's having to go in for tests. It's not been a great 2 weeks for George, has it? Despite the fact that he's been driving as well as ever.
No, it hasn't. This is sort of, you know, he's getting it from both sides, isn't he? You just feel bad for him. And hopefully, you know, he hasn't been in contact with his trainer since he left Portugal. Hopefully that means he hasn't contracted this because, you know, well, you don't want anyone to contract it, but certainly it's a pleasure watching him drive as suspect as his car can be at times. And, you know, you want to see him on track as much as possible and getting as much experience as possible for what we hope is going to be a long career, whether that eventuates, whether he has to have a year off next year remains to be seen. It does seem in the remarks that have sort of come out this week that he is safe. You know, he's made those noises basically saying like he spoke to Darlington Capital in Portugal and everything was sort of smoothed out and it's made clear to him that he's staying. As we know, and we don't have to look too far back, I'll have to look at Sergio Perez for a public proclamations of a driver staying and they're not staying, so that, you know, let's take it with a grain of salt, but let's hope, fingers crossed, that that's enough to keep him on the grid. As I said, the more we save him, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be a real shame if he lost the seat. He's been so impressive this year. I really like him as a driver. I think he's got a really good attitude. He's gone about his business at Williams really well, considering that two guys in Lando Norris and Alex Albon that he beat in F2 are driving far better cars than him. So I think he's been really professional. He hasn't moaned. He hasn't got upset. And I really hope that he maintains that seat. But anyway, thank you very much, Ben, for your time. We're just going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with Paul for his preview of the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. And we're back. I'm joined now by Paul, who, as someone who's been following Formula One for slightly longer than me and Ben have, is probably the best person to give us an idea about Imola and why it's a place that's loved by so many fans.
Well, Imola is a very special place for me, you know. It's where I started my photographic career in terms of for Marlboro. My first assignment, I think it was 1990, was to go to Imola to do testing. Official assignment for them, so that was really cool, and I really remember it well because that weekend, that week actually, it was during the week, it was rained a lot, and I got to meet Ayrton Senna. But that's another story altogether. Of course, he died there too, so there's a lot of nostalgia there. I think it's beautiful that the sport's going back, and I expect the track to be like Mugello or even Portimão, to be very challenging. And I think the most important thing is I think it will punish the drivers, which are the modern sort of tilkit drones don't tend to punish drivers. So I'm expecting a race of attrition.
So obviously we have this shortened weekend. Do you expect to see anything different? And how do you think it will affect the way that the drivers shake out?
In terms of the weekend, it's more going to Imola than the actual race, because as far as I'm concerned, the championship's kind of already decided. In fact, we've already celebrated that Lewis is the champion, and we put out some T-shirts. So, you know, that's not even a gig. But again, Ferrari home country. I see Leclerc really trying his best to put that car out there and onto the podium. So yeah, I expect a really good weekend, and like I said, I have a lot of nostalgia in my heart because this track hasn't been around for 14 years.
I think it's the enthusiasm of people like you that makes me so excited to go there for the first time. And from what everyone's saying and from what I've seen of old footage and from racing there on a sim, I'm really excited to get the weekend underway. But before I let you go, I just wanted to do quickly get your thoughts on the situation at Alfa Romeo. Obviously, they've decided to go with Giovinazzi and Raikkonen for one more season. Does that surprise you, or what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, am I the only one that is like gobsmacked by this whole thing? Because seriously, the guy is... look, Kimi, in his pomp and glory, was one of the greatest drivers I've ever witnessed. And I happened to witness him at McLaren. And again at Ferrari in 2007, the guy was a monster. He was just fantastic. Mischievous, precocious, full of fun. Boom. Fast forward, you know, 20 years, he's an old man. He's like me. He's like miserable, grumpy, you know. And you see it in Kimi. So they've kept him. But he's really now, he's a journeyman as far as I'm concerned. I think younger guys, young blood would have been a far better gig. But worst of all for me is that Antonio Giovinazzi, I mean, he might be a lovely guy, but, you know, a lot of lovely guys never made it in Formula One. But the guy has not cut the mustard. And the fact that he's got an extra year extension. Look, I sit in a desk and I watch a Grand Prix, so I get the information from there. Obviously, Alfa Romeo knows something or sees something in him. And I wouldn't say it's only Alfa Romeo, because he's a Ferrari-funded driver. For me, the interesting thing is that it closes an option for Mick Schumacher to go to Alfa Romeo. And that whole fairy tale story, Kimi, the guy who ousted Michael, now mentoring Mick, you know, it's a Netflix bonanza, but it's not going to happen because they're sticking with two drivers that actually took me by a huge surprise.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It's certainly a surprising decision and certainly one to keep an eye on. But yeah, thanks very much for quickly joining us here today, Paul. And thank you to everyone for listening. We'll be back on Sunday to review the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix from Imola, and please do check out our website grandprix247.com to follow all the news and reaction. If you want to get in touch with the show, just drop us an email at podcast@grandprix247.com, and you can follow us on Twitter @grandprix247. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak soon. Bye bye.